The Jay Young Show is a weekly podcast featuring insightful discussions with anyone from big business CEOs, celebrities, to military heroes. Each interview is a personal conversation about business, life, and anything in between. And now, your host, Jay Young.
Hey everybody, this is Jay Young with The Jay Young Show, and I'll tell you today we've got an incredible guest. We have an incredible guest. Nancy Lieberman is in the house. Nancy Lieberman, Nancy, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. Man, I tell you, I'm really, really excited about this. I mean, not only have I got to know you as a person these last couple of months, but I'm just thrilled that you took the time to be on my show. And number one, and number two, some of the things that you're working on, especially with charities. I mean, where do you start with somebody like you? The Olympics in 76, in 1980, the Olympics, and all of a sudden you decided to boycott the Olympics. I want to talk about that. Being a GOAT of the NBA. I mean, it's like there is nothing that you have not accomplished, but you're still out there talking to me all the time about charity, and it's just amazing. Really amazing. Nancy, where do you want to start? Where's the best place when you do these in your sleep with all these different podcasts that you have? Where do you like to start?
Well, you know, we never take for granted my basketball career. If there was a concentric circle of who I am, I'm a basketball player. I'm the dot in the concentric circle, you know, that dartboard. And my career is what has allowed me to do things outside of basketball. So I am a two-time Olympian. I am still the youngest Olympic basketball player ever, male or female, for the United States. We won the silver in Montreal, which was the first year women's basketball was ever an Olympic sport, which is pretty cool. And then I went to a college. I got a scholarship to play at Old Dominion University, and we were two-time back-to-back national champions. And Old Dominion really set the stage for women's basketball for Tennessee and for UConn and all these other universities. We were like America's team in the the late 70s, early 80s.
You're 17 going to the Olympics, right?
Yes.
What was that like? I mean, you got 17 years old and you're going to the Olympics.
It's pretty surreal. It's unbelievable, you know, because I was, as you know, that poor kid from New York with no dad, and, you know, we didn't have a lot, and women's basketball didn't have a lot of opportunities back in the 60s and 70s, so to eventually make the U.S. Olympic team in high school, to win a silver medal, and the year before, in 75, we won the gold medal at the Pan American Games, there were days that I would just look back and go, I cannot believe I'm a part of something that is so important in our world. And you become such an influencer at a young age because you're playing for your country. And I love the red, white, and blue, and I love being American, and I love supporting all its values.
Oh, and you've done so a lot that when we talk about great people, you know, there's a lot of great people, but they say that they're standing on the footsteps and of people before them. And you definitely, I mean, you know, there wasn't like a road that you could go. It's like you had to dig your way, crawl your way. I mean, you know, 17 years old. I mean, the youngest was 20 years old besides you, and you're 17 years old. And you go to Old Dominion, which you mentioned, and that set the stage for the professional career for you, right?
It did. You know, we're really fortunate. And I know people call me a trailblazer or a pioneer, and I respect that. It just means that you were ahead of your time. And maybe, like you said, you had to kind of lay the yellow brick road. But it's important because all generations connect back to where you started from. And I'm glad I'm young enough, I'm strong enough, I'm healthy enough to still be out here to share with our WNBA greats, our Olympic team that just won the 7th straight gold medal. I'm proud to share the history of our sport, not only with women, but with, you know, men, NBA guys, guys who played in the G League or where I'm coaching right now in the Big Three. So you have to share the history of your sport, and I'm just a part of it.
Wow. Hey, you're a huge part of it. I mean, what, so, you know, I love the show, and a lot of people come and they just go, oh, I listened to that, you know, Phil Romano or John Malden, or now they're going to say, I listened to Nancy Lieberman of all people, you know, but the one thing I love to ask is because, you know, I had somebody that I looked up to that kind of helped me get to where I am today. What drove you during that early time? And here you are 17, then you go to Old Dominion. What drove you at that time?
Well, it's a great question. What drove me is I did not want the life that my mother had. My mom, you know, my dad left when I was 8, and she couldn't pay the bills, and she struggled, and she had depression and anxiety. And I didn't want to be like my mom. I think they say women are one husband away from poverty. Hopefully that's changing. And I wanted to set my own path and, you know, kind of I made me and you can't break me type of deal. Mm-hmm. And so I was mentally tough and sports gave me that. And really, it's very cathartic because I was 10 years old when I walked into my house and I saw on the black and white TV this man. And he says, I'm the greatest of all times. I beat Joe Frazier like I beat George Foreman, like I beat Sonny Liston back in 1964. I'm too pretty not to be the champion in the world. I am the greatest of all times. I was mesmerized by Muhammad Ali. I fell in love with that man that day. He didn't know that he was influencing a 10-year-old white little Jewish girl, but he instilled in me intentional greatness, that I wanted to be great. I wanted to be better than you. And I needed sports to take me out of my hood. Mm. And every day I would just get my behind whipped by guys in baseball, football, basketball, but they were making me better and they were stretching me and they were toughening me up. So Ali was the man for me. In an incredible twist of fate, I go to Old Dominion. We win our first national championship in 1979. And I'm asked to go to New York to do an appearance to the Olympic Committee at a fundraiser at the New York Stock Exchange. And I'm going up the escalator with my mom. You know, I'm feeling good about myself. I'm player of the year in college basketball. We're national champions. And I asked the man, I said, so who's the other athlete? Kind of a little arrogantly. And he goes, oh, yeah, we're going to the green room right now. And I said, well, who's the other athlete? And he goes, it's Muhammad Ali. I said, Muhammad Ali is here? He's here? And they opened up the door to the green room, and it was my mom and my best friend growing up, Barbara. And it was like Oprah's aha moment, you know, And there he was.
Oh, wow.
The heavyweight champion of the world. I mean, Muhammad Ali was just sitting there at a table. I couldn't breathe. I'm telling you, my heart was banging.
I bet.
And my little Jewish mother walks up to him and puts her arm around his neck and goes, Mr. Muhammad, my name is Rini. You have been from Queens. And my daughter is the greatest of all times. At least I have the picture of him laughing at her.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, listen, lady, there's only one greatest of all time. It's me. And she goes, no, Mr. Muhammad, I know you're good, but my daughter. So he calls me over. My head is down. I'm hyperventilating. And he goes, Mom says you're good. And I'm like, yo, Mr. Muhammad, like, I'm the greatest of all times. And he looked at me and he goes, there's two of us? I said, and I hit people too because they upset me and they annoy me and they bully me and make fun of me.
Wow.
I'm going to ask you to not hit people. I said, you hit people. He said, I get paid to hit people. And he knew at that moment that he needed to be in my life.
Mm.
It's amazing. And to the day we buried him 5 years ago, June, there was not a time that Muhammad Ali was not calling me, not checking in on me, not having me come later in life, you know, when he had Parkinson's.
Right.
I was going to Phoenix every couple months just to sit in the house, just to hold his hand, just to talk to him, just to watch basketball games on TV.
Wow.
Quite frankly, Jay, just to tell him that I loved him and thank you for what you did for me. He knew before I knew. He goes, God made you great. God made you different. And I was like, you know God too. You know everybody. And he was just like, oh my gosh, I got to.
Right.
And whether it was playing, you know, for the Lakers in 1980 for Pat Riley or playing for the Jazz in their summer league in 86, he was always like, respect everybody, but fear nobody. And I have carried that on my whole life. I'm not afraid to be great. I'm not afraid to coach in the NBA. I'm not afraid to be a head coach. I'm not afraid to win. Two things can happen. I can win or lose, but I'm not afraid.
Right. Respect everybody, fear nobody. That's awesome. I love that. I love that. I love that. I've heard that before, but I've never heard it from somebody like you that really puts it into a great perspective with the great Muhammad Ali. Hey, but now I know you're pressed for time, and I know we're to keep this, you know, not, I want to hurry it along if you don't mind, Nancy. So what, now you're still a coach. You're coaching a men's team.
I am. I was coaching with the Sacramento Kings in the NBA.
Tell us your career. Tell us a little bit about your coaching career, if you don't mind. I'm sorry.
Well, I really didn't think I was going to be a coach because I loved being a player. And I was also doing TV for many years for ESPN and then for Fox, which is now Valley Sports. And after the WNBA started in 1997, I was asked to interview for a couple of coaching jobs, Detroit and Washington in the WNBA. They were both expansion. I ended up going to Detroit and being their head coach and their general manager. And it was really an incredible experience for me. And I knew this is what I want to do. I want to take people to places they never thought that they could go in their careers as far as being champions and just playing at the highest level. And I never thought that I wouldn't be on the women's side until, you know, one day in 2010, Donnie Nelson, who was the president of the Mavericks, he saw me and we knew each other for a long time. And he hired me to be the first woman to coach, be a head coach in a men's professional league with the Texas Legends, the Mavericks affiliate. And in our first year, we ended up making the playoffs. And I just felt such a deep debt of gratitude to Donnie. I wanted him to be so proud of what we were doing on the court, off the court, in the community. That bridged me to the Sacramento Kings hiring me in 2015 and Vlade Divac calling me and saying, we'd like to hire you, which was crazy amazing. And I would probably still be coaching in the NBA right now, but I got that dreaded phone call in the locker room in 2017. Your mother's sick. She's not going to make it. And I left my stuff in the locker room in Denver and flew to Florida. And after that season, I stepped away so I could be with my mom. And, you know, she was 88 and I wanted to have no regrets. And so I didn't know if I'd ever get a chance to coach again because it's highly competitive and there's some really great men and now great women vying for these jobs. And one day in 2018, I'm sitting in my house. I'm watching the NCAA tournament. I'm doing my clicker. I'm watching Straight Outta Compton. It's a true story. I get a restricted call and I'm like, I'm not going to answer it, but I'm a woman. So I'm curious. So finally I go, yo, who's this? And the person goes, yo, I said, yo, you called me. And he says, is Nancy there? I said, yeah. He goes, it's Ice Cube. I said, do I call you Mr. Ice? Do I call you Mr. Cube? What do I call you? And he says to me, just call me Cube. I said, how did you get my number? And he says, I'm Ice Cube. He says, you know, I'm sitting here. I have my league, the Big Three. I'm sitting here and everybody looks the same. And I'm a man pretty much of cultural change and opportunity and inclusion and, you know, gender equity. I would like for you to be the first female head coach of a men's professional league. All our players are former NBA. I mean, Amari Stoudemire, Carlos Boozer, Drew Gooden, Corey Maggette, Birdman, Baby Davis, Nate Robinson, Tino Mobley. I mean, the league is just stacked with former NBA guys who are 38, 39, 40, who can still go. They're amazing athletes, but they might not be able to get up 94 feet anymore. So it's 3-on-3 half court. And he beat everybody to the punch. He beat the NBA to the punch, pretty much beat FIBA to the punch for Olympics. This was the first year that 3-on-3 was an Olympic sport for men and women. I mean, we're playing in front of 15, 16, 17,000 people all around the country in NBA arenas.
Wow.
And my first season with these esteemed players that I mentioned, Corey Maggette, Cuttino Mobley, Glenn Baby Davis, Birdman, Chris Anderson, Quentin Richardson, and Xavier Silas, we won the Big Three championship in front of 16,000 people at Barclays Center. Right. Billions of people watching on Fox.
Right, right.
When Cube handed me the trophy, you know, he said, women can do anything. And he goes, you're no joke. I think it was a compliment. But he did call me his spirit animal.
Wow.
And it's an honor to play and to work for Ice Cube and the Big Three.
Right. That is so awesome. And you're still there. You're still doing it.
Yes.
You have a game this weekend.
I do. I'm leaving tomorrow for Las Vegas, and we're fighting for the playoffs. The top four teams, go to the Final Four in the Bahamas at Atlantis. So, Team Power, we've been besieged with horrible injuries. My star player, Royce White, is now out. I was informed by Clyde Drexler a couple hours ago. He still is under COVID protocol, so he's going to miss his third game.
Right.
Glenn had COVID. He missed four games early in the season. So it's a little smoke and mirrors, but we're grinders and we're working hard. And our job is to win these last two regular season games.
Wow. Wow. That'd be great. I know you're playing this weekend and also next weekend, right? So you'll know the standings after that. And I know you've had some heartbreak here in the last couple of, I guess you're dealing with older players, you know, so, but some really great players. Really, really good. Yeah. Well, wish you all the luck with that for sure. No question about it. And I tell you, the last segment, what I like to do is, I mean, everybody knows how great you are. I mean, you're one of the greatest. And you told me this the other day. You said, I wanted to be the best basketball player ever. That was my goal. And you've lived up to that. And you're you were talking about before the air about the GOAT and the different, or there's somebody that's calling you about interviewing you for that. They're talking about MJ for basketball, Tiger Woods for KD, or not KD for that. That was something else.
There's a couple things. I think there's a lot of signature things going on in the world. So I believe ESPN is going to be hosted by Roy Firestone, the great interviewer. Roy is doing a signature series called GOATs, and he's going to sit down and interview the GOATs of what he believes in all different sports. So I'm humbled that he would think about me. And Kevin Durant has a company called 35 Ventures, and they're doing a documentary on the history of New York City point guards. And it's a list of who's who, and the documentary is gonna be called Point Gods, G-O-D-S.
Oh, wow.
And what it takes to be a point god in New York City, because so many have gone to the NBA and excelled and been Hall of Famers. So again, to be included in that makes me happy, because that's where I got my start, in the streets, playing ball, Rucker Park. And it's nice to be remembered. None of us want to be forgotten, right? For our contribution.
Right, right. Well, I'll tell you what, you have so many accomplishments. I mean, with your GOAT, with the, I can't sit here, and I don't think we have time to go over everything that you've accomplished. So tell me, what drives you today? What drives you today? And what does it look like for you in 3 to 5 years?
Well, first, you know, I'm a mom, and I love being a mom. And I, you know, my son, I'm so proud of TJ and what he's done as a professional athlete, basketball player, playing over in Europe, over in Israel for the last 4 years. He had played two summers with the Milwaukee Bucks in summer league. So I'm proud of what he does. And obviously I'm still very highly competitive. We want to win championships. But you know that my Nancy Liebman Charities is near and dear to my heart. We were ahead of the curve, Jay. We didn't wait. I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm just telling fact. It wasn't because of the pandemic. It wasn't because of the George Floyd, what the world saw in that situation. You know, I was that poor kid. I was the one who didn't have, who felt less than. I know what it's like to have those feelings and be, you know, depressed and not be self-assured about where you're going in your life. We are a children's charity. We can't cure cancer, we can't cure diseases, but what we can do is we can take amazing young people who were born into certain circumstances, maybe red line districts, maybe poverty, below that Mendoza line, if you will. And but we can help them. And that's what we've done for the last 41 years, and you know, since 2008 as a 501c3. We've sent 70 high school seniors to college. We just don't pay for them to go to school. We stay connected. They have my cell number, they have my email, they have to communicate with me, right? Skin in the game. We connect them with first responders in those cities, so they have a mentor. They have to see what an EMS or a deputy mayor or a police officer, forensics lab. And just 4 hours a semester you have to give us, and you have to shadow first
But don't they have to
responders.
call you? They have to call you, or they have to call you like once a month, right? Is that the?
One during the semester. You're happy, you're sad,
I mean,
you're doing well.
you're not just giving money to people. You're asking them for their feedback. Tell me what you're happy or sad about. Yeah, it's amazing.
We need to. We need to be there for them. And you know, sometimes people that have throw money at stuff just to say they did,
Right.
and really don't know where your money's going.
Right.
And you know, with us, we've been fortunate. We work hard. You know, we have had a 92-to-8 ratio, money that we bring in, millions of dollars we bring in, and money going out. Of course, charities are businesses, and you have to have people. You got to pay people to work, or
Right.
it doesn't happen. But regardless, between sending kids to college and our Dream Court program, it was my dream to be on a court. These courts mean something. It was a safe place for me. You couldn't bully me, you couldn't make fun of me, you couldn't disparage me, you couldn't profile me, and you could no longer judge me. I was in charge of, did I show up? Was I reliable? Was I dependable? Was I working on my game? Did I get better? I'm a critical thinker. I am a smart woman today because of what happened on the sports field. I know inertia. I know science. I know technology. I know engineering. And by the way, I know math. I know if I have more points than you, I win. I am STEM and was STEM before it became a thing. And we want to be able to show kids that our dream courts, and we have 102 of them open around the country. And before the end of the year, another 15 will be up around our nation.
Wow.
And we have over 4.2 million children in our programs. And I didn't want to raise my hand in the classroom because I was afraid that if I was wrong, people would make fun of me. And I didn't want to get in any more fights with people. So I just sat and shut up. On a court, I could be free to say, I can do this, I can do that. Yes, no, you got to make this cut. And it's a beautiful thing. The Dream Courts are pop-up classrooms for those programs that I just mentioned. And then we have a major program with kids and cops, where police officers come, do clinics, work with the kids, spend time, work on respect, work on communication with one another, trust. And then we also have a program connected to that where we've put thousands of basketballs in trunks of community police cruisers. So if an officer sees a kid on a court, it doesn't even have to be a dream court. Pops the trunk, gets a ball, throws it to the kid, rebounds, shoots with the kid for 5 or 10 minutes, and then, you know, gives him a high five. Here's my card. Keep the basketball. If there's anything you or your mom or dad need, just call me.
Wow.
So we're trying to bridge. We're trying to drip, drip, pour, pour. We want to lead love and acts of kindness. And that's what we do. We've given over 2,000 iPads. If, you know, I always joke with people, but if I took your iPhones or who, or, you know, the people who are going to listen to your show, if I took your phones, y'all would cry because it's your oxygen. You know,
Right.
everything you have is here. And I know how important this is. Some kids don't have that. They need iPads. They need iPads to do homework, to be on a level playing field academically.
Right.
The
Awesome.
backpack program, a lady asked me one day, why do you give backpacks? obviously she didn't understand because she had never gone through it. If you're a poor kid and you have nothing, but you have a real amazing looking backpack and you have supplies for a year's worth of school in there, it makes you feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
And why are you carrying a Chanel purse? Because you want people to think you have the money to have a Chanel purse. My backpack was a brown paper garbage bag, and my pencil bag was a brown paper pencil, a brown paper sandwich bag where I put my pencils and pens in. I was embarrassed. I would put a belt around it and hide it under my jacket.
Right.
So if you haven't been there, you don't know what it feels like, how it tears at the core of who you are.
Right.
And we want to be on a super team. We want people to call us and say, we love what you're doing. How can we help?
Right.
We want to help the next generation. They deserve it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you've done so much, and you continue to do so much. Think of all these different things. I can't imagine the mind instead of Nancy Lieberman and all the different things that are going on there, because you're not only, you know, you're probably still playing basketball somewhere, not professionally. You were the youngest and the oldest, right? You're the oldest person to play in the WNBA, but you also probably do that. And you're talking about your coaching right now, and you're staying involved, but you're also the charities that you're in. And you have a big event coming up on September 11th.
It's at the Omni in Frisco. It's our 10th anniversary Dream Ball Gala. It was my dream to have a ball. So
wow.
It's called. And it's our 10-year anniversary. The majority of our fundraising comes from that, so we can fund our programming. And over the last, 9 years, we've raised a little over $7 million cold hard cash. And
wow.
We take it and we give it.
Wow.
It's not ours. And so philanthropy is really important. Muhammad Ali taught that to me when I was 19. He says there's two people in life. There's givers and there's takers. And the great Maya Angelou says, don't go through life with two mitts. If you're always catching, you're a taker.
Mm-hmm.
If you're throwing something back, you're a giver.
Right.
And life is so short. You know that. You know, my friend Kobe Bryant, when he died, a year and a half ago, he was worth $600 million. I mean, money, really, what does that mean now? We all probably, some of us have more than we ever thought that we could have.
Right.
Somebody else. That's the legacy of who we are. It's not just about us. It's about what we do for other people.
Right.
And it's a choice. Life is always about a choice.
Right.
You want to help? Be the teammate you always wanted to play with. If you see somebody that in business that you go, man, that guy Jay, he dresses nice, he cares, he gives, he's a good family man, and you want to be around those people. You know, that becomes an influencer. You don't influence people just because you make more money, you have a nice car, your business card says that you're important. Organically, just be that good person.
Right.
That has some kindness and empathy for someone. We can't solve all the world's problems, but I guarantee you we can help somebody.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel so good to help other people.
Yeah.
Or it does for me.
I tell you, and you definitely reached out there, and you have, the basketballs and the cops car and the dream courts, which we're talking about Tiger 21 putting in a dream court somewhere here in town, so we'll put it so it's, and I think Derek's got a picture or two of it, but it talks about, you can put it on later, but it's a dream court, so you build your own dream court like at a Boys and Girls Club, and so we spend $150,000 and we put in the dream court itself, which is a great, AstroTurf. It's some of the turf on the basketball court itself, the basketball. It's just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. We put the money in, and then we donate it to the Boys and Girls Club, or they're the ones that take care of it on a daily basis and make sure that it's all taken care of. But in that, plus all the things that you're doing right now. It's just, you're definitely amazing and a beautiful person. And what I really do like about you, or I say like, but is your personality and your humor. You know, I remember the first story that I remember, and I know we'll finish up after this, but the first story that I remember where you were talking about, you met Warren Buffett, and you and Warren Buffett are good friends, and then you talked about him introducing you to some guy named Bill. Can you tell us that story? Because I've gotten a big laugh out of that several times. I've told that story.
The good news is Warren has a good sense of humor, and so I was at the shareholders meeting and years ago, and it concludes on Saturday, but on Sunday, all the people that come from out of town, you know, like all the billionaires that, you know, so you go to
Nancy Lieberman's of the world, you know, people like that, they get invited. The Jay Young show doesn't get invited, but the Nancy Liebermans get invited. No, just kidding.
But so we're at the country club, and Warren comes over to me and goes, Nancy, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. And I said, of course. And we go to this table, and he goes, Nancy, this is my friend Bill. Bill, this is Nancy Liebman. She's a basketball Hall of Famer. And he starts doing all that stuff. And Bill's kind of like in a little bit of a think tank. And and he goes, hi, I'm Bill Gates. And I'm like, Gates. That name sounds so familiar. and Warren is just looking at me like, you're not going to do this to me here. And I go, Gates, Apple computers. And people are mortified at the table. Okay. And I go, I'm Microsoft. And, you know, he starts laughing, Warren starts laughing. And so then we start talking, and I said, Warren, let me ask you a question. You've given your friend, it's Bill, right? $37 billion for his charity, and you haven't given my charity $1 billion? I know you so much longer than it's Bill, right? And every time I do that, Bill Gates kind of just looks at me out of the side eye. And I go, why would you give him $37 billion? And he made a statement, which has stayed with me forever. Sometimes we want to donate and we want to do good, but we don't know exactly what to do. So I knew that he had this incredible program in place, and I knew he could do better with it than I could, but I wanted to support that.
Wow.
And that's what life is, right?
Wow. I mean,
you don't have to invent, but instead of just throwing money at stuff just to say you donated, align yourself with people that you know are really in the trenches with children or with cancer care or with whatever tugs at your heart. And, you know, if we do, you know, go to NancyLiebmanCharities.org, look at what we do, look at the work. You know, we have measurables, we have metrics, we have outcomes. And we want these kids to be equipped to be successful as they get older.
Yeah. Man, what a great deal. And if your charity's driven anything like you, which I'm sure it is because you put your name on it, you wouldn't put your name on anything that wasn't spectacular and incredible and just giving away a lot of money every year, and which is just, I mean, that is so good. It's September 11th. It is September 11th at the Frisco Omni. I was thinking Omni Frisco, trying to put those words together. The Omni in Frisco, October 11th, the Nancy Lieberman Charities, and that is going to be, and you can go online right now and you can buy a table. You can just donate money. I'm sure there's a donate button somewhere that if you can't make it, but you like to donate money, you can donate money there, but that's going to be a great event. What are some of the things that are going to happen that night? What's going to happen that night?
Well, I can't spill the beans on everything, but I will say this. In the past, we've honored Charlotte Jones Anderson. Jerry's been with us. Billy Crystal, Bo Derek, Muhammad Ali, George Foreman, Sugar Ray Leonard, Toby Keith, Larry Fitzgerald, Winona Judd, the great legendary singer Sam Moore, Tony Romo. I have leaned on my friends in this community and beyond in the name of helping raise money for children. If you come to Dream Ball and you don't feel the vibe and the love and the kindness and the humility in the room, then we haven't done a good job. But those people show up I mean, we honored Ice Cube 2 years ago and he was blown away. And when he looked at me, he goes, he calls me NL. He goes, NL, I had no clue how big this was. I had no clue. And we still talk about it. And, you know, I'm excited that people have not only trusted me, but believe in what we're doing, you know, to help kids. Wow. So you'll have a good time. You'll feel good. You can make it a date night. You can take your corporate buddies, take them out, have some fun, and then just get to do something impactful
right.
for other people.
I look forward to it. I'll be there. I'll definitely be there with a bunch of my friends, and we're gonna put together some money and help the. Your passion is just incredible, off the charts, and that is just so great. And that's one thing that just helps drive me toward your passion of not only all the things that you've done, because man, I mean, you accomplished a lot by the time you're 20 or 30 years old than most people ever will. But you don't stop. You keep on, and I mean, you're traveling tomorrow, and you're doing four Zoom calls like this today. I mean, you've got an incredibly busy schedule, and you stay on it. And I'm just so proud to know you.
Thank you so much for you, for your friends at Tiger 21, my friend Jack Muller, who introduced me to all of you. I feel very blessed. So thank you. And I appreciate being on your show and for us to do great things together.
Well, thank you, Nancy. I appreciate that. And I look forward to seeing you again soon. I'm going to watch you this weekend. Good luck on the big three this weekend.
1 p.m. Dallas time on CBS.
1 p.m. Dallas time on Central on CBS this Saturday. Nancy's going to have her team out there called Power, and that's going to be incredible, and best of luck to you, Nancy. I tell you, thank you so much, everybody, for listening today, spending your time with us. And it's not every day we can have a Nancy Lieberman on the show, but I tell you what, take this and do something good for yourself. Make yourself feel better. Don't be the taker all the time. Be the giver. Go on nancylieberman.org and learn more. So thank you, Nancy, for being on, and thank you, audience, for being here. And until next week, thank you.